This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Here we go. We're really doing it on a day in which the opening ceremonies for the Winter Games will happen in less than an hour. They are going to get started. The games are actually already underway. We've got Super Bowl 60 on Sunday, and we are less than a week away from Cardinals pitchers and catchers having their first formal workout in Florida. This is the Gas House Gang. It's Mike Claiborne, Kevin Wheeler, Chris Ranji. You can watch the show on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter at KMOX Sports. You can also stream it on the Odyssey app. And if you want to comment, you can, as you're watching the show, have a comment. You can leave it on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. You can also text into the show at 314-436-7900. Claibs is in Florida. He has been there for a bit. You had the Cardinals cruise, and now you're in Florida getting ready for spring training, Mike.
Yes, sir, I am, and we're waiting on things to get settled over at the ballpark. As you know, they went through a mass undertaking. A lot of reconstruction, a lot of new construction going on at the ballpark. I've never seen this many people working on a project in all the years I've ever been in Palm Beach County. I mean, they are working tooth and nail. I think there was an inspection scheduled for today. Hopefully they'll be able to move in everything over the weekend because I think pitchers and catchers for the WBC report early next week. So there's a lot of work to be done. Although I will say this, they've got all the plants already embedded.
And that's pretty. The stuff that matters. Don't need the hidden lab. Let's just make sure the plants are good.
Exactly. I mean, you would not believe the amount of trucks. And by the way, a new irrigation system for the plants. Also.
All right.
As I drove by last night, it was flowing freely.
Awesome. So it's all about the plants. Problem.
But when it comes to equipment, you should see the lines of trucks that are trying to deliver furniture and equipment and everything else. It is an incredible undertaking.
It's fascinating. And by the way, Claibs, you're right. The WBC guys can report Monday. So pitchers and catchers for WBC can come in that early. And that's for all around Major League Baseball.
I don't know where they're going to pitch and catch at.
I'm sure they're
using the backfields. No. I mean, they're using the backfields to do a lot of things. There's like 100 minor league guys here.
Oh, already. I figured. Yeah, they got their camp going, right? An early camp?
Exactly. So they're all the way on the backfield, and that poor grass back there is getting trampled on. It's almost like a football game back there with all those people running around. But I commend the groundskeepers are doing a good job of keeping the fields up. But there is a lot going on down here in Jupiter.
Yeah, and this is part of the overall push by the Cardinals to really improve the foundational structural, the infrastructure levels. Because they have it, and I don't know, Kevin, if you and I have talked about this, but Bernie and I have, that Baseball America now has them ranked number 2 of all the farm systems. That's part of it, too, that they're just trying to get better with facilities, trying to get better with training, trying to get better with the acquisition of young talent. And Claibs, this is all tied in together.
Yeah, you're right, Chris. And I know while people want to see people spend money on baseball players, they're making a bigger investment in the future of what this team is going to look like. And, you know, they made a lot of trades, obviously. They've acquired players from other organizations, but they've also hired a ton of coaches, instructors, development people, you name it. We've multiplied that times 3 with regard to what we used to have. And there's a lot of people. They should all have, hi, my name is such and such, and this is what I do badges. There's 2 things they need. They need the hello, I am such and such. And then they ought to have signs that says, please excuse our dust. Because there's a lot going on down here. And I'm serious. There are people walking around I've never seen before.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they're looking at me like we've never seen you either. So we have that in common.
It's great because you need the humans. You know, you need the instructors. You need the numbers of people to work with the number of players that you have. And you also need the tech. You need pitching labs. You need hitting labs. You need to have the ability to take a young player, whether it's in spring training or in season, and get them in that position. Say, here, look, this is what's going on. Here's how we're going to get better. And here's the step by step. And when you're, you know, the last I don't know. I don't even know how many years, Klabes, the last 5 to 10 years, the Cardinals have had lesser facilities in those regards than a lot of colleges. You know, like Vanderbilt was more advanced. And, you know, it's time for that. And that's partly why you see at the same time these investments are being made, because they're not cheap. These are big deals.
None of this stuff is cheap.
But they pay dividends for decades.
And they're outfitting their minor league parks as well.
Yeah.
And they're outfielding their minor league parks as well, so they'll be able to track guys from everywhere. This is a large undertaking, and I don't know if people really take that into account. They just want to see guys on the field. Well, we'll have hopefully better players on the field. And while they have traded for other players in other organizations, it'll be interesting to see what the new Cardinal way looks like with respect to instruction, and this is how we do this and this is how we do that, because the previous generation of instructors, they're just about gone. I mean, there's Jose Oquendo walking around and maybe two or three other people, but other than that, this is a completely different generation of instructors and people who want to write the next chapter of what the Cardinal way looks like.
And what about drafting too? Because there are still some of the same folks who are there.
I mean,
in the
Randy
front
Flores
office
is still in charge.
He's
of the draft.
Still here, and usually,
but he's a sharp guy, man. I mean,
yeah, right.
Before, you know this well, Klabes, but before he even got into a front office job, he was working on tech projects. He was working on player development projects on his own.
He had his own company. He went back to USC, got his MBA.
Yeah.
I mean, Randy Flores checks every box there would need to be if you wanted to have a baseball executive, as a general manager, as a president of baseball operation, you name it. He is qualified to do it. Not to mention, he was a pretty good pitcher. And if I'm not mistaken, still holds the record at USC for most wins as a Trojan.
Didn't know that.
There's nothing he hasn't done. But with that said, there's a lot of guys walking around who I think have some interesting credentials. And how we move forward, I'm anxious to see on how this is going to look. And it's going to take a little time, but I don't think, you know, you have some people, well, we'll be all right in about 5 years. Well, I don't think we have to wait that long. I think
if you do, some stuff went wrong.
Yeah, and I think the key is when you trade for other players from other organizations, there's two things you have to look at. Is this a guy that is adaptable to what we're trying to teach? That's the first thing. And secondly, does he have the same skill set tool-wise that when we scout is what we look for in what our next Cardinal generation is going to look like? So there's been a lot of work that's been done, and there's even more work to be done down the road. So this is going to be fun, especially when you have a guy who you acquire who can throw from both sides. Now, most people think he's just going to throw from the right side. But, Kevin, you got to admit, there's going to be a night where we're going to need a lefty to get another lefty out. And he's going to be the only guy sitting out there.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, how do you monitor a guy like that? I mean, is it pitch count? Is it lower body to make sure he has the legs to be able to continue to pitch? I mean, there's so many things about this young man that I'm anxious to see how they put their hands on him and get him to be the best player he can be, whether it's a starter, whether it's a reliever, whether he's throwing with both hands, maybe he's throwing with a foot. I don't know. But the bottom line is this is something we've never seen before. And I'm anxious to see what that teaching process looks like.
Yeah, it's hard because, you know, one of the things about being a switch hitter is getting the same number of reps on each side every day. So if you take 100 swings right-handed, you need to take 100 swings left-handed because you got to make sure. And if you have a weaker side, you might need to spend more time on that.
You take it even more. Yeah.
Right. And in the case with a pitcher, though, the problem comes in with workload. How much can you put your body through? And you're working each side differently, right? From the right side, you know, when you're throwing right-handed, the backside is your right. And when you're a lefty, the backside's the left. So they're doing slightly different things, but your body's still going to fatigue. And
quads and glutes, man, they're going to be different.
I think he's going to end up being right-handed only. And I know that Heim Bloom talked about it this week. In fact, on Gas House Gang, he talked about it.
On Tuesday.
They still want him to throw left-handed. It's a part of his routine. They don't want to take that away. And there are some really good, like, biomechanical benefits to doing things in reverse because you're training your body and you're giving yourself some a better base to work with. And you'll even see that. Sometimes hitters will take swings opposite side just to train the whole body as opposed to, even if they're not switch hitters, just to make sure
Tommy
that you're
Edmund
getting.
Was a
yeah,
guy
Tommy
like
Edmund
that.
Did
really,
a lot of that.
He faced guys from the opposite
yeah.
side.
So, so, you know.
You know, you need balance. And you know what, Kevin? I think in this day and age, because we really have drifted away from the 2 and 3 sport athlete. So now if you're just solely going to be a baseball player, you have to be able to use your entire body for different things, whether it's from a training standpoint or just a production standpoint. And maybe this is the next step in how we see athletes, especially baseball players, develop themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, Kevin, you coach youth baseball.
Yeah. I'm also ambidextrous. I throw both hands, too.
Do you really?
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't know that.
But there's a big weak side. The left side's a much weaker side. But, yeah, I can do it. And it's not – like, I can throw BP both hands. I've played in games left-handed, even though I'm a right-handed natural player.
But in terms of what Klaibs is talking about, we're...
Switch hitter, too, hey?
I was. Did you? Not good at it, though.
Well, but what he's talking about, hey, there are kids, when we were growing up, it was, you didn't just play one sport.
Oh,
I mean,
no.
You played in the summer, you played baseball, maybe go play basketball in the winter.
Yeah.
And you hear a lot of experts in physical education who will say, you need to change it up and you can't just specialize.
No, you can't. And I think the specialization stuff kind of gets overplayed. And not that it's important. What I'm saying is I think people assume it's not that the people aren't doing that, but they still are for the most part. Like in the program we're in, almost all of our top players play multiple sports.
That's what I was going to ask you. How many kids do you have
most
that come
do.
Through?
Yeah.
Good. That's good to hear.
I would say the majority and especially the top guys. Now that changes when you get to be a sophomore or junior in high school. When you see, all right, I'm getting recruited as a baseball player and not as a football player, maybe now I'm going to focus. But that you still spent your whole life building up to that, building those skills with another sport. I think it's more prominent, guys, in areas of the country where they play year-round. So
right.
Georgia, Florida, Texas,
it's warm
California.
All the time.
Yeah. Like you'll see more of that because they'll just play baseball year-round. They won't be down. They won't be inactive. And I think that's a major problem. I know of major programs in the South, like really talented groups of players, where their coaches say, if you're going to play another sport, you can't play for us. And that's,
you know what
that's
I'm
terrible.
Seeing,
it's a horrible idea, and I don't think it's the common way of doing it.
You know what I'm seeing, especially here in Florida, I'm seeing more baseball players that are playing lacrosse when they're not playing baseball.
Sure, yeah.
And it kind of makes sense from a hand-eye coordination aspect. And you're getting your running in. So,
some physicality.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly. So that may be the trend. But I guess if I had a kid that was a good player, the first coach could tell me he's only going to play one sport is probably the last conversation we have.
Yeah, I think it's him. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you don't have to play them all at the elite level. That's hard, right?
Yeah.
If you want to play club soccer, travel baseball, and travel hockey, good luck to you. It's just not going to work out. Like one or two might take a little bit lesser priority, but you can still do them in high school. You can still play in your high school sports. I mean, as doofy as I am, I played 3 sports in high school until I was realizing that I couldn't do 2 of them anymore, and I stuck with baseball. You know, I mean, like eventually you were just told, all right, you're not a basketball player anymore.
The game decides for you.
It did,
Yeah,
yeah,
it sure
that
does.
My genetics.
games and injuries decide for you how far you're going to go.
Yeah, or in Kevin's case, the vertical.
Vertical
decides for you.
The tap on the shoulder that says, that's not going to be your sport anymore. Come on over and get in this line.
I knew my basketball career was coming to a close when I was the backup point guard on the number 2 freshman basketball team.
Oh,
because we had 2 squads.
So
of 10.
So you were on D team.
Basically, yes.
Okay.
All right. Kevin.
Okay. I know there was freshman C team basketball, then you had B team, and then you had varsity. So you were D team.
I was backup to the 3rd
something.
String.
That's saying something.
Hey, you had a uniform, didn't you?
Hey, I had fun, dude. I can
there
tell you
go.
That.
And you know what? And it's only appropriate that you found yourself in talk radio talking sports. I mean, there's more of us than there are them when it comes to their athletic skills.
That's right.
Mike Claiborne, Kevin Wheeler, Chris Ranji, Gas House Gang, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com, and Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. It is Mike Claiborne, Kevin Wheeler, Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang, weekdays 12 to 1 on 104.1 FM KMOX and the Odyssey app. We spent some time talking about the Cardinals at the beginning of this show, and I think we can continue that just a little bit here because Brendan Donovan was officially traded this week, and this was a move that we all expected was going to come. There was some speculation that maybe they can't quite get the deal they want, so he is on the team to start the year. But they were able to make a home for him, or find a home for him in Seattle, part of a three-way trade. And we mentioned some of the guys they got back in return, and also a couple of draft picks, some compensatory picks, which is, that to me is a big deal. Guys, as I look at the trade, and from what a lot of people around the country who cover baseball know the sport really well, most people seem to think the Cardinals ended up getting about as good of a haul as you could possibly get for Donovan. What do you think, Klabes?
Well, you know, it's still to be determined. I mean, we're getting prospects. They end up might be being suspects at some point. But everyone seems to think that these players that they acquired have a chance to be in the big leagues. I mean, it wasn't like we got the first or the second best player in the organization. But I think you have to look at the organizations, and you look at what Seattle's been able to do. They've developed a lot of guys internally that have turned out to be good, especially when it comes to pitching. So that's always a good sign that you're dealing with an organization that has shown the ability to coach up players to be able to contribute to a big league team. And I think sometimes when you look at the prospect level, you have to ask yourself the question, why is he sixth or seventh? Is that because there are some guys that are a little further along than he is age-wise, or maybe you're backed up at a certain position? I remember the Cardinals used to have a guy, his name was Mo Mazzalli, who hit like 350 in the minors his entire life. And the only reason why we didn't see him in the big leagues, there was a guy named Musial playing in front of him, so he never got a chance to play. And you'll see that from time to time on why certain guys don't move up higher within an organization. So let's hope that some of these guys that they've been able to acquire can move further along quicker in this organization. I think the guys that we've been able to acquire, I expect to see some of these guys this year, okay? And I'm going to start with Liam Doyle. I think there's some guys that, you know, have come far enough where somewhere down the road, barring an injury, that I think we should see some of them on the big league team. I mean, look, we're open for business, okay? We need more competition in different positions. So I don't think anybody's safe. Yeah, they shouldn't be.
I'd say you're right, Klabes. Each organization's different. Use the Cardinals as an example. They have six top 100 prospects on their roster. So if you're in the top six on their roster, you are by definition one of the top 2% in all of minor league baseball. And another team might have a sixth guy who would only be ninth or 10th on the Cardinals. You know, I mean, like, so the second guy in another team might not be as good as the Cardinals number mm-hmm. five guy. So the individual rankings, like number 1-7 per team, are really hard to understand unless you know what that group is. And Seattle's has a great system, one of the tops in Major League Baseball, little less now because they gave guys to the Cardinals.
Right.
So they actually flip places in a lot of the rankings because of the trade. And I think, you know, that trade, I spent some time on it the night after the trade went down, and I looked at all the comparable trades in the last 10 years. So major league position
players. You had a lot of free time,
didn't you? I did, man. I got to tell you.
I thought you'd be prepping for the Olympics, but apparently this baseball thing has consumed you.
You don't like the Olympics.
Yeah. I host Redbird Rush Hour, man. I'm more on the Cardinals.
That's right.
I went through all these deals that are position players traded for prospects and focused on the ones mostly that had multiple years of team control left. And there isn't a deal for a comparable player that was better than this one when it comes to the return at the time of the trade, right? You never know, like you said, Klabes, some of these guys bust out. Some of them are amazing, and you can't tell in advance what those guys are going to be. But it measures out with all of those, and in a couple of them, it's even better. You're like, they got more, for example, to me, they got more for 2 years of Donovan than Oakland got for 3 years of Sean Murphy when they traded him to Atlanta. And Sean Murphy was a high-end defensive catcher and an above-average hitter. He's pretty close to the same offensive numbers as Donovan, but doing that as a catcher with an extra year of control, and the Cardinals got more than the A's did from Atlanta in that deal.
Well, and, you know, here's the other thing that I think that we need to take into account. Brendan Donovan's 29 years old.
That's correct.
Okay?
Yeah.
And getting expensive. With two more years of control and getting more expensive, and that would have been a tough decision to say, when he hits 30, going to be 31, how many more years do you give him? Because maybe we've seen the best years already. And, you know, if you're going to move him, this was the time to move him. He'll do well in Seattle.
Absolutely.
They'll give him a long-term deal. I'm not worried about him. I think on the back end, there's enough players, I think, that they've been able to acquire to at least give you a better feeling about how close you can be to contending and competing. And those are two different things, I should say. Competing is one thing.
Right,
contending
right.
is something that we all expect them to try and do here in the, yeah. in the very near future. But I like it for this other reason. You have a lot of guys already on this roster with big league experience. This isn't like we just called up the Memphis Redbirds and just brought them here and said, here you go. Most of these guys have had at least 2 years of big league experience. And I think that says something about them understanding now is what is required mentally and physically to be able to go through a 162-game schedule.
That's correct. Also, though, still a pretty young team.
Yeah, they were young last year.
Still a pretty young team. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what they needed to acquire. And I think they did about as well as they were going to do.
Yeah.
And you were looking not really for major league ready players. You were looking for guys who are part of your future.
You're looking for
and
max upside. Max upside.
That is exactly what they did.
And velocity, miss bat, hit dingers, run.
Swing and miss.
Good athletes. Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, can we find a right-handed guy with some pop?
Well, you got
maybe
him.
Paul Goldschmidt.
He's going to take a little while, guys, but it's Raniel Rodriguez.
Oh, there you go.
That's going to be your guy, but unfortunately, he's only 19, so it's going to take a few years.
Real quick, before we say goodbye to you, Kevin, I know you got to run, getting ready for the Dave Glover show. There were some
and
rumors about Goldie.
For Winter Olympics.
And yes. Winter Olympics. Curling's happening soon.
Yes.
Goldie, what do you think about bringing him back?
It's fine, but I think the outfielder's a much better fit. You know, if you're doing that, If you're trying to get right-left balance, it's just going to shift Burles into the outfield as a left-hander if you're going to put Goldschmidt at first base against lefties. I'm not down on it. He's a great guy. He's a great clubhouse guy, and he can still hit lefties. A better fit is outfield, and we were talking about like maybe Randall Grichuk's still a fit.
Hmm.
He's out there, hits the ball hard, still runs well, plays all three outfield positions.
Strikes out a lot.
He does.
He does.
But he's a part-timer.
Kevin, enjoy the
Glover
show.
So you only strike out part-time is what you're saying.
That's
okay.
Right.
All right.
We'll be listening, buddy.
See you, man.
Mike Claiborne and I will stick around with you. Jason Reed, senior NFL writer, is going to join the show when we come back. He's also the author of the book, Rise of the Black Quarterback, What It Means for America. We'll talk Super Bowl and NFL with Jason Reed next on the Gas House Gang.
Now back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling.
And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Super Bowl is Sunday, so this is our last Football Friday for a long time, unfortunately. It is Mike Claiborne, Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang. It is time to go to the guest line. This afternoon, we welcome in Jason Reed, senior NFL writer for ESPN, also his book, Rise of the Black Quarterback, What It Means for America. Jason, we appreciate you being on the show today. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Doing okay. And also, a happy belated birthday. I know that happened yesterday for you. So thank you for joining us on your birthday week, as it is Super Bowl week here, and the Seahawks are a 4.5-point favorite in the game over the Patriots. And I have been saying this for several days now, I can't handle another Patriots run. I can't do this. I thought we were done with it, and now they're back in the Super Bowl. How good do you think they actually are?
Oh, the Patriots are very good, and you know, Mike Vrabel is an outstanding head coach, and I never understood the Tennessee thing to begin with, how they let him get away. But that said, you know, to win in the NFL, you need a really, really good head coach. And you know, really, really good quarterback. And I think they have that combination now. You know, Drake May, you see what he did from year one to year two. And really, a lot of it, I believe, is the coaching, is the infrastructure that the coach put in around him. And so I'm not ready to say that you're going to see a Bill Belichick, Tom Brady run. But what I will say is this. That organization has proven its stability over the years, obviously. They now have... you know, the only reason I'm not calling him a great head coach, you got to win a Super Bowl to be considered a great head coach. He's a very, very good head coach. And same thing applies to the quarterback. But I think they now have those two positions in place for, you know, 10 years moving forward.
Hey, Jason, I wanted to ask you about your book, The Rise of the Black Quarterback. And I've seen everybody from Haven Moses all the way to where we're at now. Was there one time or one quarterback of color that really changed the perception that people have at quarterback? And I still think that there's a fine line where people still feel like, you know, black quarterbacks can only run or they're not complete, so to say. But is there one quarterback that stands out for you that maybe has changed the view of how most football fans look at that position?
I mean, I would say Patrick Mahomes, because, you know, Patrick Mahomes, his dad is black and his mom is white, but he has made it very clear that he looks at himself as a black quarterback. And when you talk about the game and all of the, you know, the great quarterbacks who have played this game, there's never been one who's gotten off to a better start to a career in the Super Bowl era than Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, a lot of fans, I would say, don't look at him as being black. You know, they look at him as just being a great quarterback, and the haters look at him as being a guy who gets all the breaks. But I, you know, I look at him and I see what he's accomplished. I see how he has accomplished. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is not a quote-unquote running quarterback. Now, he'll run when he has to pick up the yards he needs if that's what the play calls for. But he's not a guy, like, you think more of a Josh Allen as a running quarterback, a Lamar Jackson, although Lamar Jackson has proven that he can, you know, play in the pocket and play very well. So, yeah, I think for me, Mahomes, I mean, clearly there are other quarterbacks through the years who have changed perception because of what they've done. But in terms of the most important thing, winning, he's the guy for that.
And Jason, when you wrote that book was almost 4 years ago. And, you know, even since then, we had a year where I believe at the start of the season on week one, there were 16 black quarterbacks who were starting in the NFL. You're talking Mahomes and Jordan Love, Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, Jaden Daniels. It's just things have continued to progress in that way.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is that I find so interesting about it is there have been, over the last 20 years, there have been a lot of black quarterbacks, but the difference now is all of these guys, with very few exceptions, are number one draft, or, you know, first round draft picks who their teams have been built around them. You know, you look at Jordan Love, you look at Lamar Jackson. You look at, I mean, C.J. Stroud, he didn't have a great year, but he fits that bill as well. So I think, you know, when I wrote the book, this is what I was envisioning, that within 3, 4, 5 years, half the league was going to be black quarterbacks, and not just people who, you know, fit the description, okay, he's a black guy who plays quarterback. These are first-round draft picks, franchise players who their teams have invested everything in.
Yeah, you know, I think you make a great point, because there was a time when a black quarterback was taken middle round, late round, and, you know, maybe we'll have him come out and take some snaps. But now, I think because of the way the college game is played today, these guys are getting quality snaps in the college level, where they're being showcased at a better level than what they used to be. And I think that's one of the many reasons why we see more quarterbacks of color being taken as early in the draft as they are now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the game has evolved to a point where the athleticism on defense is just so incredible that you need people who don't necessarily need to be able to run for 20 yards every play, but they need to be elusive. They need to be able to stay upright. They need to be able to stay on the field. And when you look at where we're at now, you know, just look at the top quarterbacks who, you know, are coming out these years. So many of them are black, and it's really, in another 4 or 5 years, it would not be surprising if there are 32 NFL teams. It would not be surprising if 20 of the starting quarterbacks in the NFL were black guys who were all drafted in the first round.
Hey, Jason, I don't know if you have a vote or not, or you had a vote. Your thoughts on the Hall of Fame selection?
Well, I do not. I did not have a vote. Because I don't vote in Hall of Fame, and I know you're talking about the Belichick thing, right?
Well, no, you know, I didn't have a problem. I understood. Vahe Gregorian wrote a great piece on why he didn't vote for Belichick, and I didn't have a problem with any of those guys who were inducted last night. And I'm a huge Roger Craig fan. This is the first guy who rushed for 1,000 and caught for 1,000. And he didn't do it in 17 games, okay? I mean, he did it back in an era where everybody was playing for keeps. And I thought he'd been overlooked before. So I didn't have a problem with any of those guys who were inducted last night. And as far as Belichick is concerned, you know, there's a cloud. I mean, you know, listen, people in St. Louis will always feel like, you know, he cheated. And I think that a lot of coaches cheat. He just got caught. So, and he'll have his day. I'm not disputing that, because he did a lot of other good things that made his teams very good. So I don't really have a big issue with that. But, you know, some people felt like it was a travesty. Hey, listen, I tell you what travesties are, is when people who are dead get elected in the Hall of Fame when their statistics didn't change when they were playing, but they end up passing, and their families can't really revel in the fact of them being a Hall of Famer when he's alive. So that's what I have a problem with.
And also, we have a little bias here, Jason. We've got Torrey Holt, who we've been thinking should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame for years, and he's left out again.
Yeah, you know, I look at Torrey Holt, you know, and Reggie Wayne. I mean, two guys who were instrumental in their team's success. You know, and the problem is, this is all subjective, you know, as you guys know. There's no, like, set criteria, and so the voters let their subjectivity get involved with the thing. And, you know, it's just basically what their opinion is. If I had a vote, I would have voted for Torrey Holt. If I had a vote, I would have voted for Reggie Wayne. If I had a vote, I would have voted for Bill Belichick, to be very honest with you. I mean, I get the – I know that there are people in St. Louis who go to their graves saying that they stole signs in that Super Bowl. I know that they were caught doing it. I know it was a horrible look that the NFL destroyed the evidence so that people could not really determine, okay, well, how bad, how pervasive was this thing? I just think, though, that when you talk about six Super Bowl championships as a head coach, two as a defensive coordinator, arguably the greatest defensive mind in the history of the game, and on top of that, that, you know, I mean, I've talked to old timers who have told me that, Jason, like, we all did that. We all tried to steal signs. Yeah. The difference is he just got outlandish about it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but as far as Torrey Holt, I definitely think Torrey Holt's a Hall of Famer. You know, you don't have the greatest show on turf without Torrey Holt. It just doesn't happen. And I think the unfortunate thing for Torrey Holt is that if the Rams could have won that second Super Bowl, I think it would be a different story. I think, you know, they talk about the ring being the thing. So many times you look at it, if a team wins multiple Super Bowls, in the minds of a lot of these voters, because, again, it's all subjective, we're like, okay, they won two Super Bowls as opposed to just winning one Super Bowl. So, but, yeah, I think Torrey Holt's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, but Larry Fitzgerald didn't win any Super Bowls, and he's ahead of Torrey Holt. But that's an argument for another day. We'll let that go.
Yeah, I think Torrey gets penalized for being on that team with all those other guys who are Hall of Famers.
Yeah, exactly. And you're only going to take so many guys from one team.
Just last thing, this is very selfish, Jason, of me, but you wrote about Caleb Williams a few weeks ago. How good is he going to be?
Look, you know, I'm a University of Southern California graduate. I during his junior year, I went to I only cover the NFL, but I asked my editors if I could go spend a week in Southern California to watch him and talk to him and do a big piece on him. And, you know, look, he got so much criticism for crying at the end of that game when it was clear that they were not going to have the season they wanted to have.
The painted nails.
I get that people look at him and they want to dislike him because of those things. But I also get the arm talent. I also get, once they got him with a good head coach, a guy who's an offensive coach, a guy who could push him and get the most out of him, but actually also knew what the heck he was talking about. Like, you see the development from year one to year two. And I got to believe that Ben Johnson, working with him now in another full off season, going into another season, you're going to see the development even more. The thing that you saw last year was that, okay, why the Bears picked him? He makes all the throws. he can do it in the crunch situation. His rookie year, that thing was so chaotic. Mm-hmm. The coaching situation wasn't good. But I think Ben Johnson rubs a lot of people the wrong way. He comes across as very arrogant. But when you can back it up, you can back it up.
All right.
And I think he can back it up. And I think that this kid, I think the sky's the limit with this kid.
Future MVP, that's what I heard. All right, good. Sounds good to me. Thanks, Jason. We appreciate your time today. Thank you for talking with us.
Anytime, fellas.
That Thank is you. Jason Reed, NFL senior writer for ESPN. His book is Rise of the Black Quarterback, What It Means for America. That's Mike Claiborne. I'm Chris Ranji. When we come back, we'll wrap things up here on the Gas House Gang, but because
are we
going
to get some Olympic in? Are we going to talk Winter Olympics?
Yeah, we'll come back and do that. You ready?
Wait.
All right.
No.
We'll talk about curling. Curling, when we come back. Just a bit to go here on the Gas House Gang, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com, and Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. It is Mike Claiborne and Chris Ranji, and Claibs really wants to get into the Winter Olympics. Who's your curling favorite?
I don't want to get in trouble because, curling, you can get in trouble with a lot of women if you go the wrong way on that. I just enjoy watching activities that I can't do, which is just about everything. I mean, I could play hockey a little bit and I could ski, but not to the level of what you see these athletes do. So I'm just looking forward to watching stuff that I normally don't see. And how well people fill out uniforms is also something that, you know, for reasons.
Like the bobsledders.
Bobsledders, speed skaters.
Yes,
You know, lower trunk individuals. Let's just put it that way.
Hey, but, I think we have
I look forward to it, though. I will watch.
We're supposed to have a pretty good speed skating
really?
Team this year, I think. I think in terms of talent, one of the people, Jordan Stolz, that's it, for the USA. He's the favorite to win the 1,500-meter gold medal.
That's way too long.
That's a long distance.
That's way too long for me to watch him. I got to find something a little quicker.
I can't be doing all that.
My attention span doesn't take me that. You know, they said the 10,000 meters, well, I'll check back tomorrow on that. I can't do it.
Yeah,
do you have a favorite event? Do you have an event you're going to, like,
you know, look around? I used to really like speed skating, like the short track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Remember that? Was the guy Dan?
Yeah, it's
Dan Jansen. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, he was in St. Louis not long ago.
That's right.
Event. I like that. I like that short track where it's almost like roller derby, you know, where guys are mm-hmm. jockeying for position, you know. You know it's a tough sport when you have to wear a helmet on the ice.
That's right. You gotta get a
big I mean, because the speed skate, the other guy, they just put a hood on it. They're fine. But that other racing, man, when they're really going out, you have to have a helmet on. So, you know, that's something I kind of like.
And I got into curling back when the dude who looked like Super Mario was in the
I got into curling as a child sweeping the kitchen floor. So that's my
it's
curling
about the same
experience.
Thing. We are not a favorite. Great Britain is the favorite for that.
They do a lot of sweeping over there, huh?
Apparently.
I thought the Canadians were good at this.
They are the second favorite. They're plus money. So if you want to put $100 down, you can win 90 if they win.
Down with the British.
Hey, Super Bowl pick, who wins Sunday?
Seattle.
Yeah, I think you're right. They are the
only
4.5.
I don't like New England.
Dude, I told you I cannot do this Patriots thing again.
I cannot root for them. I don't care who's coaching.
All right.
They are good, though. I give them credit, but not good enough on Sunday.
I agree with you, man. We'll do it again next Friday. And spring training
can't
will
wait.
Officially be underway when we talk again.
I can't wait to talk to you then, if not sooner.
Let's go. That's Mike Claiborne, my guy. I'm Chris Ranji. Anything you missed on this show, Odyssey app, iHeart app, or wherever you get your podcasts, we'll be back Monday at 12 o'clock for the Gas House Gang.